Now my job is to introduce tonight's speaker. And you know what? I was thinking, like last week, Nora asked me, I want you to introduce me when I go to the Ice House. And I was trying to think of something funny or something witty to say or something like really cliche because she's beautiful and I want her to like me. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you know what? I really don't have to say anything because I think that what you see, the proof is in the pudding with her. You know what I mean? She came in a year ago. She's like a year and 5 days sober. And what she does is she's active in the program. She's got commitments at all kinds of meetings. She's sober. She's working the steps. She's got a sponsor. She participates. And one of the things that she's done for me is I used to think that friends were like people that had something I needed or someone that could get me what I wanted and stuff like that. And then I would go to jail and then none of them would write me. You know what I mean? I'd like, be like, well, where are you now? You know what I mean? And I didn't understand what friendship meant. And like one of the things that she did for me or she's done for me is I don't have a vehicle right now, right? And she's made herself available. If I need to ride anything, time to and from a meeting, she'll come and get me. I mean, that means a lot to me. And I always see her make time for, like, other people. I mean, she's never too busy for anyone. If you need to talk to her, she'll always make time for you. And it's invaluable to me. And so I want to thank her for that. Another thing, one of the things that she did do is, like, a couple times I got a ride home from her from the meeting, and I'm like, hey, can we stop by Save Mart for a minute? And so she's like, yeah. So we stop at Save Mart, and we go inside. And I'll tell you what, guys. I have always been intimidated by females, right, my whole life. But you have no idea what that was doing for my self-esteem, parading her through Save Mart. I'll tell you. I'm like, hey, let's go to the fair. I want to take her to the movies. I want people to know, you know what I mean? But like I said, you know, she's one of my best friends today, you know, and I cherish that friendship. So I want to introduce my friend Nora. Thanks.
Go back and sit down. He said so much already. Hi, my name is Nora and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a grateful alcoholic. I've been on the program, like Phil said, or in the Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for a year and 5 days, and I'm very proud of that. I have a home group. My home group is Rainbow, and they're here in the house tonight. Thank you for your support. So I'm going to share with you, you know, how I was, how I got here, and how my life is today. And I'm going to start at the end, and then I'm going to back up a little. I'm only going to say one thing about today. I am extremely happy. I am the happiest I've ever been in my life. That way, when I tell you kind of sad stories that I'm going to go through, just remember what I said right now. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life that I never even knew that we or I could have. I never thought that it was possible, so I never dreamed of it. So all of you know from my accent, I'm Mexican. I came to the States when I was 19 years old. So I grew up in Mexico, and that's where, you know, I started drinking. But in my family, drinking is normal. It's not something that we consider a problem or a disease or, you know, unless somebody dies and they're like, maybe he was an alcoholic, you know, and I have a few family members that have died due to alcoholism in my family. My life started kind of awesome. I was in a hurry like alcoholics, you know, are. I was in a big hurry to be in this world. So I was born on my dad's car on the way to the hospital. Couldn't wait. Go figure, you know, that said something about me right away. You know, I never live in the moment. I'm always ahead in life. And I learned in the Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that is one of our symptoms, right? We can't wait. You don't, you know, appreciate the moment because we're always living ahead in the future. So that's how my life started. You know, my parents, they had a Cinderella story when they first got married. My mom was very poor. My dad was okay. And so, you know, my mom tells me stories of, you know, when you guys were little, you guys had everything, you know, because later in life, you know, we didn't. And so when my dad, you know, before he passed away, our life was good. But I don't remember because that was a year and 3 months when my dad passed away tragically to, an accident. And so after he passed away, you know, my mom had to, you know, carry on for us. She was 6 months pregnant with my little brother, and three of us were already, you know, born. So can you imagine that, a 22-year-old widow having to run a, you know, a farm that my dad and her had and had to carry for us. So needless to say, we had to all grow up really quick, fast, you know. Good thing I don't have memory of a lot of events that took place in our lives, because my mom tells us that, you know, a lot of times she had to leave all of us alone so that she could go carry, you know, for the animals or, you know, take care of the cornfields and all of the things that my dad would have been doing, you know, instead of her. And so very early in life, you know, we were not abandoned, like, you know, you leave your kids because you don't care for them, but due to the, you know, lifestyle that my mom had to face quickly, very fast. She had to do everything herself. When, you know, it was time for us to go to school, my mom decided, you know, this is not the place where I'm going to raise my kids, and so she moved to the city, you know, with us, and she didn't have much education. She only completed 3 years of school, so she had to get any job that would just pay, you know, put food on our table. When we moved to the city, her aunt, which is my grandmother's sister, came to help her, so she was living with us, and, you know, I love her to death. She not only raised us, but she raised, you know, my mom in a way, and some of my mom's cousins, you know, actually one of my cousins here that is the son of all those cousins that I'm talking about. She was a single lady. She never got married, so she used to live in all of us' houses and just help whoever was having kids, you know, because in Mexico, you have a kid, your mom comes over and helps you, and, you know, here too, but over there is like a whole ritual that they do, and it's just pretty nice. So, well, she got stuck with us. Unfortunately, she was an alcoholic, you know, and I grew up seeing her drink every day of her life, you know, in the morning, in the middle of the day, at nighttime. I mean, at 6 years old, she will send me to get her some beers because, you know, her and her sister couldn't do it anymore. And I remember thinking, you know, why do they drink? They start so happy, and, you know, by the time they were done drinking, they were fighting. My grandma and my aunt, they were like going at it, you know, and I remember my little brother and I will take advantage of that and steal their cigarettes. I'm like, oh, they're fighting now. Let's go get the cigarettes. Well, they don't need to be distracted too much. You know, you get them. And there were these little cheap cigarettes that I never even seen here in this country, you know, but they even had a filter or anything. They were just like, you know, so I don't even remember smoking them. It was just to be cool. You know, we sit up on the roof because, you know, grandma couldn't get up there or Nana. And so we sit up on the roof and we'll just like pretend we were smoking, you know. And my little brother and I are only a year apart, so we were partners in crime, you know, a lot. My two older brothers, it wasn't a boarding school, but it was the type of school where they lived at the school from Monday through Friday. So I didn't get to see my older brothers too much, you know, for, I don't know, a few years until they graduated. But I used to see them on the weekends, and my mom's only day off. My mom worked all week except for Wednesdays, and I still to today find Wednesday my favorite day of the week, go figure. You know, it is, because I remember coming home from school and the house was clean. You know, I didn't have to clean it because usually I had to clean it before she get home, and there was food on the table and the house just smelled like, you know, the smell of your mom's cooking. Everybody knows that smell. It's like, oh, mom's home, yes. So, you know, it was the best, and I remember Wednesday being my favorite day of the weekend. We grew up like that, you know, going to church. You know, we had a semi-normal life. You know, my mom did the best she could, and she is my hero because she did amazing for somebody that had to be put in the situation that she was, you know. My brothers were growing up, you know, they were doing okay. None of us were getting in trouble, you know. We were, you know, the kind of trouble where you break a window, you know, your neighbor's window, and then you run and hide. Hopefully nobody saw you. And, yeah, well, they did see us, and they will be waiting for my mom. And I don't know if it's because we were raising ourselves. Most of the time it was just us four. You know, my Nana, like I said, you know, her deceased, she was always gone somewhere drinking. I will see her at nighttime. She either came back from somebody's house already drunk or not come at all. She will stay. They wouldn't let her, you know, go home. Family members will just take care of her. So I remember waiting for my mom, seeing her enter the door, and depending what smile she had, if the neighbors got to her or the neighbors didn't get to her. You know, so she walked in like, I was like, damn it, they told her, you know. And if she was like, hey, how's everybody? We're like, yes. She doesn't know yet. And we were really good at covering for each other. You know, the four of us grew up tight. We have had an amazing life. You know, they are my biggest supporters, you know, on this disease. Because we, on the last 15 years, we haven't been that close and not in hard ways, because we love each other to death. You know, when you have that bonding, you know, distance doesn't separate you. But I don't get to have physical time with them. They really didn't get to see the ugly, you know, and how nasty I got, you know, when I hit my bottom. Thank God for that, right? I mean, in a way, it's a blessing. But my poor mother, you know, she had to be there for it. So going, you know, back again, you know, having that kind of life where the four of us were always taking care of each other, you know, allow us to cover for each other, you know. So I remember when my little brother first got drunk, and he was like 13 years old. I haven't yet had a drink yet, and I remember like helping him. He was throwing up. He was hallucinating. You know, he was sick. And I was scared, because if my mom used to get mad about breaking a window, imagine if she comes home and he's drunk, that's going to be ugly. So I did everything I could to try to sober up my brother. I gave him coffee. You know, I was crying. I was just praying that my mom wouldn't come home and, you know, find him that way. And to be honest, I don't even remember the end of that. I don't remember if she actually caught him or not. But, you know, thank God he's not, you know, where I am today. Because I thought for sure, you know, he was a little crazy growing up. And I remember always having to worry about him, you know. I was like his mom, and I still consider myself, you know, his mom. Because we're only a year apart. So at school, I will go and, you know, the teachers will be, you know, he stole somebody's lunch. And guess what I did? I cover up for him. I wouldn't go home and tell my mom he's in trouble, you know, because I didn't want him to be in trouble himself. And so a lot of that, you know, the little lies and things that as a kid, you know, that make you feel bad because you're lying, you know, I just started to get used to, you know. And I thought, you know what, I find that lying gets me to, you know, places and things, and I think I'm just going to keep on doing that. I think that that has been one of my biggest, I would say, hardest things to overcome since I've been on the program. It is practice, and I actually love practicing that, because I didn't think that it will be possible not to lie, you know. Seriously, if I have pie, I would change the flavor. I still say I have pie, but I changed it, you know, from bananas to apples. You know, what was the point of that? As a grown-up, you know, I'm not talking as a kid. I was like, why is it still pie? You know, who cares? Like, oh, yeah, I had apple pie. And I was like, but it was banana, you know. So those things today, you know, are a daily reminder when I'm about to do it. It's thanks to this program that I think about, like, you don't lie. You got to be honest, you know, because we got to be honest with ourselves if you want things to really work in life. And that's not something I was, you know. Being the only girl in the family, I became, you know, the one that started cooking at age 6, doing their laundry. In our culture, you know, men don't do a lot of work. I'm looking at my cousin, and he's laughing, right? Because it's the truth. They don't go in the kitchen, okay? My grandmother's raised me where, like, she would, like, ask him to please leave the kitchen because they ruin the meal if they even were around. Go figure that. You know, they don't clean. They are to be served. You know, they are to be taken care of. All they do is they bring the bread home, and we girls take care of the rest. So that's how I was raised. Now that I did anything they say, because I remember telling myself, oh, they got it coming. When I get married, he's going to serve me, and he better learn how to cook, because I'm not going to do all the cooking. And I don't care what my grandmother and my nana say. I'm going to do it my way, because I was very rebellious, you know, from the get-go. They told me to go, you know, right, and all I would say here, I went the other way. You can't do this. That's when I did it the most, you know. And again, being the only girl, I was always with the boys. My brothers, you know, we were the ones that had the basketball or the soccer ball. So if the other kids didn't want me to play, my brothers would go, okay, well, there's no ball. So she doesn't play, we're taking the ball home, and there's no game, you know. So I was accustomed to always being, you know, around boys, you know, growing up. So when drinking became part of what I did at age 19, I was very proud of drinking with the boys until last year when I was still drinking. You know, if there was a gathering at our families, I'd be like, I'm going to drink with the boys. I was the only girl drinking with the boys. And I did not see anything wrong with that throughout my entire 20 years drinking. I didn't. It was normal. I was pretty cool. I thought, and I used to say, oh, I can drink the boys under the table. And it was true, actually. I could. Go figure, as little as I am, I actually could do that on many different occasions. But you know, when we finally, you know, after I graduated from high school in Mexico and I was going to school to, I wanted to be an architect. My mom lost her job, and it was a job she had all her life. You know, she started, you know, on a very low level and got to where she was, and because she didn't have any education, they decided, you know, she wasn't good for the company anymore. So we were find ourselves, all of us finishing high school, needing the most money ever, and she did not have a job. So our family, I'll say 50% of our family lives in the USA, so as soon as they heard, they're like, okay, you need to come over here, you know, we'll help you, you'll work here and send the money back home. And so she migrated here with one of my brothers, and she left us behind, you know. My older brother was already married, so, you know, he was, you know, having his life. My little brother and I were to stay with him, and that was not pretty because he was very, very bossy. He did not let us do anything. If my friends will come to the house and, you know, ask me to go to the library, he'll lock me up on the restroom and he'll be like, no, you're not going. I'm in charge and you're not going to get pregnant and I'm, you know, responsible for you and I got to respond to mom. And so I decided, well, we're going to live. So me and my little brother went and, you know, moved in with my mom's good friend. And that's where I started drinking. My first blackout was the night I moved out of my mom's house, and it was tequila and 7-Up. I still to today cannot drink 7-Up that much. I get repulsed and sick, you know, with it. And I remember drinking, but I don't know, not liking it, but liking the feeling, like, oh, the numbness on your fingers, you know, the heat, and you start getting all warm and cozy, and I was like, ooh, I like this. And all the tingling that's on my finger and my toes, and I keep sharing with everybody, you know, like, is it supposed to feel like this? Because it feels good. And they're like, I don't feel anything. I was like, well, I feel all these things. And next thing you know, I woke up, and I was like, what happened? I had a blackout, my first drunk. You know, I don't remember anything about it at all. I don't know if I have fun. They say I did, but I was informed of it later. Being sick, I remember being sick like I'd never been before, like dying. Like I thought I was going to die. At one point, I was like, I know I'm having a heart attack. This has to be a heart attack. And thinking about my mom, she's never going to see me again. That's all I keep thinking. I wasn't thinking I did wrong. What if she finds out? I'm thinking, shit, I'm going to die. Like, what a, you know, what a bummer. But not about what she was going to say, because, I mean, I respect this lady, and I wouldn't do anything to disappoint her. You know, I grew up wanting to be the perfect little girl, the perfect little sister. You know, I needed to be all of those things. I mean, everywhere I was with cousin, you know, I was a catechism teacher, you know, at church. I was on the play, you know, I was the angel for the nativity every year. I love that because I didn't grow up for a long time, so I could play that part for a few years, and that was fun, you know. So I was always somewhere, you know, doing something, trying to be that perfect kid. But, you know, that really didn't serve me well later in life. It really didn't, because it made me who I was going to be, you know, as a grown up, the same way. Always wanted to be perfect, please you, make you happy, give and not even take, not even being able to learn how to take, you know. If I lend you money and you're ready to pay me back, I'm like, no, don't pay me. I'm like, I can't even take my own money back, and I'll lend it to you. You know, that's how bad I am about receiving. And I learned here, thank God, to receive love. I have so many good friends here that have taught me how to do that, and you know who you are. So when I came here to the States, you know, I went to school. I wanted to get my diploma. You know, I thought, you know, I'm going to go to high school because I'm here now, and I believe that we're not going back because my mom got married, so where are we going? You know, we're stuck here. So I'm going to do the best I can. And I started learning, you know, English, you know, right away. I was already 19 years old, so it was hard, you know, to learn a second language at that age and try to get your diploma all within a year. Actually, I just told my sons a few days ago that I completed my high school years in 1 year, and my sons were like, what? I go, yeah. Well, I came in with education already, so they just needed to test me to make sure that I actually knew, you know, and set for the language, you know, math is the same in any language, you know, and all the other stuff. So I did 10, 11, and 12 all in 1 year. And they were like, that's not possible. I go, it's possible. Look at my diploma. So I did that, and so I got my diploma, and I'm like, okay, now what, you know? I wanted to break break the mold, you know, how we are when we first get here. You know, we work on the field, we work in factories, we do things that other people can't do because we don't speak the language and because that's the only education that we have. So I wanted to be different. So I was lucky enough that my stepfather worked at a hospital, and he gave me a shot. He goes, well, you could be a clerk, you know, on this, you know, job here. All we have to do is, you know, pull x-rays, you know, when somebody says, you know, so-and-so's here, just go find their x-ray jacket, bring it to the doctor, and that's it. You don't really have to speak that much. So go figure, the doctors wanted to talk to me, and they wanted to teach me things. And I remember carrying a little dictionary, a pocket dictionary, so the doctor will tell me, hey, Nora, can you please go and to the third floor, and I need to talk to so-and-so, and please tell them that the patient needs this, and I will look at the dictionary and try to figure all the things, just grab a few words of what he's saying, and then put the sentence together. I'll be like, I know what he wants. And that's how I pushed myself through to actually, you know, move up, you know, the ladder. And I did. You know, I became the office manager of the hospital, and I worked there for 10 years. You know, the doctor says, you know, to me when I left, we knew you were going to do something from the get-go. You know, you just, you know, needed to be put in the right place, and you went for it. So it was one of those things where when I first came here, I used to dream of being American. I really did. When I was in Mexico and I had English, I used to dream that that's all I spoke, that I live already in that country. And I never even in my wildest, you know, dreams thought that that was going to happen. That was just my own dreaming and imagination, you know. So when it happened to me, it was a gift. It was a gift. I love, you know, both my boys are American. So, like, you know, when we talk about that, how I am an American, but I am going to let you have my culture. We always talk about that, you know, because you still have to know where I came from. But I'm very proud, like I was telling my son. He had to do an interview with me a couple of days ago about an immigrant for his AP Human class. And I'm like, well, I'm right here. What would you want to know, you know? You can interview me, you know, and so it was pretty fun because he got to hear things about me that I don't think he actually knew before. So, you know, that was amazing. And, you know, I would say for throughout my life from my, you know, 19 to 27 when my kids were born, I dreamed how, you know, we girls drink when we're at that age, you know. It's Friday, yeah, let's go to the club. You know, couldn't wait to get out of, you know, work and get pretty and go to the club and go dancing. So I didn't really think I had a problem, you know. I was talking to my mom on the way over here, but I did have a problem. I just didn't know then that I had a problem because I was always thinking about when I was going to drink next. So it was like Monday, I'll be like, okay, cool. Oh, I know there's a club on Thursday where we can go to. So on my mind, I was always planning ahead when not the next time I was going to go have fun and dance and enjoy the girls like I do now sober. You know, it's totally different, and you still can do it, minus the alcohol. But for me, back then, was the alcohol part. So, obviously, that was, like we all say in this room, it's a progressive disease, but we don't know that. You know, if you're my age, you know, and you just got here, do it because you want to. If you are 20 years old and you want to venture what it will be like, don't do it. I wish I didn't have to do it. You know, I wish I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous when I was in my 20s. You know, but God knows why, and He had a plan for me, and I'm doing it now in my 40s, and it's okay. I'm okay with that, you know. I will never forget what I went through so that I can be here today, and I'm just going to share with you a little bit of my last 2 years so I can tell you how good my life is now. You know, the last 2 years of my life, I had it all going again. I started a new job in Visalia. We moved here 9 years ago, but my husband decided that I shouldn't go to work. I'm a cancer survivor, and I moved here to Visalia so that my mom could help me with the kids because they were 6 and 7 at the time, and I was just getting better. And so everybody spoiled me, don't work, you know, we'll just take care of you. And it was nice. It was nice to be loved so that you can, you know, get better. You know, I'm a proud cancer survivor, 10-year survivor, and thank you. Thank you. And I thought I already had gone through everything in life, right? Yeah, right. Nobody told me about alcoholism. That was bad. You know, I already went through cancer. You know, I pay my dues in this life. I get to do whatever I want, right? And I deserve it. Why not? You know, I almost died. If you almost die, you'll do whatever you want and treat yourself the way that you want it. And so when I started working again, it was fun. You know, the alcohol stopped a little bit because I was working. You know, I didn't think about alcohol while I was at work, you know, for the first 3 years. But the last 2 years, the obsession was so intense, you guys, that, and I know my babies will probably hear things here they haven't heard yet. I will wake up in the morning early enough so that I could at least have 2-3 shots of Jack Daniels, because that was the only thing that could do it for me. You know, beer, I never really like it, and besides, it doesn't really work on me as much. I have a tolerance to alcohol because of all the painkillers that I have used throughout my, you know, cancer history. That, I mean, I could drink probably more than any of you guys in this room and still be normal, functional, and go to work. And I will go to work. I'm not saying drunk, but I was under the influence, absolutely, because I was drinking. You know, I mean, just because I wasn't drunk, and I would tell myself, you're not drunk, you're okay. You could do this. Go to work. When it became to between making a choice of continuous drinking and keeping my job, this is how sick I was. I'm on the top of my job. I am making good money. I am the office manager of these two doctors. They are succeeding. They are making business happening. We're opening offices in Hanford, Visalia, Porterville, Lindsay. And I am driving to all of this office drinking, because I will carry my little bottle of, you know, whatever it was. Little one, you're cute. I always try to bling bling it so, you know, I drink like a lady. You know, it has to be cute. Like, you know, nothing was wrong with that. I mean, if you had to drive and work as hard as I did, you'll be doing the same thing. You'll be drinking. But how sick to think that way, you know, that is. So, my very, 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 very bad bottom, I woke up, you know, thinking that I'm going to just drink and not go to work. But then I remember I had a meeting. I'm like, shit, too late, I already drank, so I still have to go through this meeting. But it's one of those conference call meetings, so, like, they're not going to see me, so we'll be okay, you know? Well, it did not happen that way. I was not okay. I went off on somebody else on the other line. I don't remember anything I said, you guys. I was in a total blackout on this conference call meeting on my job, right? And I was still, you know, at work. I was walking, and I went to my desk. Nobody noticed that until lunch came, and my bosses called me on their office, and they're like, what happened in the morning? I'm like, what happened? They're like, Nora, who did you have a fight with? I said, I didn't fight with whom? I haven't fought with anybody. I've been at work all day. What are you talking about? They're like, what happened on the conference call? Then at that point, I'm like, well, something must have happened. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sitting here. I say, well, I don't know. What have they told you? You know, like, oh, let me change it now. I think I know where you're going with this, but please fill me in. And I still couldn't tell them. And because they cannot tell that I'm drunk, they really think I'm just messing with them. They started to get mad, you know. They're like, just tell us exactly what happened. And I say, really, it must have been nothing if I don't remember. And I was honest, I did not remember. But they couldn't believe it. Well, of course they couldn't believe it. You know, it's easy. You're working, you know, I'm paying you. What are you doing representing us drunk, you know? So before they get to learn that I was a drunk, I quit my job that week. You know, by Friday, I told my boss I'm not coming back. I could have just been honest with them. You know, I regret it now. They would have helped me because they love us like a family. My kids, you know, I mean, I still see them on the stores. You know, they're still my very good friends. And I'm working on steps, you know, 8 and 9 right now. And there is a big man coming up that way that I have to do with these people. They're my first man that I'm going to, you know, honor. And I'm working on that with my sponsor because they deserve it. They really do deserve it. We wear their family. My kids have instruments on their room that they, you know, give them. The parties, you know, they treated them like they were, you know, family. And I, you know, how you share what you eat, I did that big time. Big time. And, you know, it was because of my alcoholism. It took over. I did not have control over it anymore. I did not want to stop drinking, and I knew if I keep working, eventually they're going to find out. And, you know, my husband is on the medical field. He's a surgeon assistant, so he does the surgeries with the people that I work with. They're like elbow to elbow cutting patients, you know, together. Hey, how's your wife? Oh, she's drunk. You know, they couldn't carry this conversation. So I quit before they learned, you know, what was going on in my life. And when I quit is when things went downhill fast. I quit on May 31st, 2013. And on May 3rd, 2013, I woke up wanting to kill myself. I woke up that morning. I already have not taken a shower for days. Taking my kids to school was horrible. You know, like I would yell at them every day for no reason. For no reason. Because I was mad. I love my kids, and everybody that knows me knows how much I love my kids. All my Facebooker friends out there, you know how obsessed I am with my kids, you know. So I did not like my own kids, and I didn't know why. They were a problem, you know, like I have to pick them up from school, that means I have to be sober at this time. It was a freaking schedule that I had to keep in order to be functional enough to be able to pick up my kids from school. And I don't even remember going to Julian's practices or games because I was just dropping him off. You know, I haven't missed a single game on my freshman son this year. I'd be there for every single game. And I owe it, I mean, all to you guys because you taught me how to be a mom again. Because I was a shitty mom. You know, I was like, fuck, who can be so horrible? Who has kids that want it so bad? Because I wanted my kids so bad. You guys, you have no idea how bad I wanted them. And then I turned into this disgusting mother that didn't even care for them. They were a burden for me, you know. And alcohol did that. Alcohol did that to me. I traded the most precious thing that I have, which is my boys, for drinking. And the last year has been amazing, amazing. I feel described to you guys what I do. And you know why I do it? Because when I went to rehab, I learned tools, you guys. Rehab saved my life, you guys. I went there and I sat in front every day of a classes. You know how they wake you up so freaking early? Man, I used to have a lady, I called her the warden, you know, the cop. She was like, get out! At 6 o'clock, and I open the door and I already have makeup on. I'm ready. You don't have to wake me up. I go, can you not wake me up tomorrow? And so like I was like taking control there, and she was like, I'm gonna wake this girl up every day. She'll come even earlier to my room. So I started to like listen for her steps and be by the door and open the door before she even knocked. You know what I mean? It was like a game that I had with her because I was like, you freaking drunk on a power trip? You're just as drunk as I am. And I was sick at the beginning when I went to rehab. I was still sick. You know, I was judging the counselors. I was judging the tech, you know. What the hell? You don't tell me what to do. You're just as drunk as I am. You know, just have a few days more than I do, whatever. So, at one point, at one moment, I don't know when exactly, but I do remember my spiritual freaking slap on the face, because that's what it is, and thinking, wow, I want to be sober. God did something for me. He changed something on my heart. I wanted to do it so bad. I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to get out. I mean, I was like, I just want to do everything they're saying here. Like, I'm going to use every tool. You're going to have, if I have to use them on people's heads, but I'm going to use my tools, you know, like, I'm just going to learn and do whatever it's been told for me to do what I need to do. And have, you know, I know that Alvarez might hear, but he said this before. He got sober because of his mama, right? But then later, it's because of him, you know, because we learned that, you know, with me, I did it because of my boys. But this program is teaching me that I have to do it for me and want it just for me only because they're going to grow up. They're going to have their life. And what am I going to have? Am I going to go back and drink because now I have nothing, you know, with them? So right now, you know, my sponsor and I work on things to do like a Nora day or Nora thing, you know, and I'm very conscious of like, oh, the boys are not with me. But I have to learn to be with me. I have to learn to love me. I have to learn to be okay with me. If I'm happy, I'm going to tell you that I'm, you know, happy. But if I'm mad, you're going to see it. And I think my friends in the program already know, like, hey, did you guys see her? What's wrong with her? You know, and I'm like, yeah, something's wrong. You know, I have another relationship in my life that I haven't yet taken, you know, it just doesn't work. But I learned in this room to keep my side of the street clean, to do what I need to do, to do for me, and just pray to God and let it be, you know, let it go. And that's helped us a lot to be a family, you know, to understand each other and to respect each other. The boys have a better chance now to have a better life, you know, because of this room. They owe it to you guys. I owe it to you guys because you guys show up, because you guys teach me, you know. But for you that, you know, are new to the program and just thinking like, fuck, I'm here because of a card and the judge is making me, and, you know, just listened, because maybe something will change, but it won't be because they're making you. It will be because you want to do it for you. And it does work if you work it. You know, when they said that, I used to think, works if you work it. I used to roll my eyes and make fun of the sentence. I really did, especially in rehab. I was such a clown at the beginning. The first 3 weeks, I was more of a clown than I was a patient there. And those things, they all resonate with me now, you know. I used to be a mad person. Now I use this sentence, don't hate, meditate. Don't hate, meditate. Don't hate, meditate. Don't hate. And it works, especially if you get in my way of life and I'm really going to get pissed at you. I just, don't hate, meditate, meditate. It works. So those are things that I've done. I'm just sharing with you what I'm doing, you know. Jump into service. It's awesome. I love service. I love being of service, you know. It's been a year and I held a few positions. Some of them about to end and I'm pretty sad about that. But I will always be here and do other things, you know, where meetings, where people need me. I have an amazing chain of friends that, I mean, if I was to say names, I'd probably spend about 20 minutes. So I decided that I wasn't going to say names. But I did found my best friend on Alcoholics Anonymous, something I never had before. I never knew what a best friend was because I would, like, take her boyfriend, you know, and then she wasn't my best friend anymore. She got mad. So that didn't work too well. She left. I was still calling her my BFF, and she was all pissed at me. But I don't do that anymore. I actually know what it is to love and to receive love. To be there for a friend when they're calling you and they're telling you they're having a bad day. And to relate to people that have things in common with me. And if I can ever, you know where to find me on Wednesdays, which still is my favorite day of the week. I'm here for you guys. And, you know, with that and God, that it's like my driver now, you know. Driving Miss Daisy, God's right in front. He's taking care of it. I'm just going wherever he tells me to go. And I am listening this time. I'm looking at the gut shots. I get them all the time. I'm like, oh, people, guess what? You are not going to believe that. I had a gut shot today, and it was huge. And before, I wouldn't even notice what that was. I never even knew that word existed, a gut shot. Why, is it going to shoot me or what? You know, stupid things like that. But Alcoholics Anonymous really is my new way of life. I'm proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My kids are not embarrassed that their mom is an alcoholic because they have learned in this room that mommy is happy. She is a different person. And they like the new mommy, you know. They do. They woke me up at 4:45 a.m. on my birthday. The little one is like, it's your birthday. I'm like, yes, it's my birthday. And so thank you very much. I will continue with my story if you ever ask me to share again. But I love you all very much. Thank you.
That was awesome. Maddie Alcoholic, thank you so much, Nora.